So, I thought this morning that we would start with a story, a creation story, about how this earth we sit upon came to be, this place, this continent. It's a story common to several of the Eastern woodland peoples of North America. And it's a story that has spread so widely that it will be familiar to many of you. This version is from this book, Braiding Sweetgrass, familiar to many, by Robin Wall Kimmerer, who is a botanist, writer, and a member of the Potawatomi First Nation. She fell like a maple seed, pirouetting on an autumn breeze. A column of light streamed from a hole in the sky world, marking her path where only darkness had been before. It took her a long time to fall. In fear, or maybe hope, she clutched a bundle tightly in her hand. Hurtling downward, she saw only dark water below. But in that emptiness, there were many eyes gazing up at the sudden shaft of light. They saw there a small object, a mere dust mote in the beam. As it grew closer, they could see it was a woman, arms outstretched, long black hair billowing behind as she spiraled toward them. The geese nodded at one another and rose together from the water in a wave of goose music. She felt the beat of their wings as they flew beneath to break her fall. Far from the only home she'd ever known, she caught her breath at the warm embrace of soft feathers as they gently carried her downward, and so it began. The geese could not hold the woman above the water for much longer, so they called a council to decide what to do. Resting on their wings, she saw them all gather. Loons, otters, swans, beavers, fish of all kinds. A great turtle floated in their midst and offered his back for her to rest upon. Gratefully, she stepped from the goose wings onto the dome of his shell. The others understood that she needed land for her home and discussed how they might serve her need. The deep divers among them had heard of mud at the bottom of the water and agreed to find some. Loon dove first, but the distance was too far, and after a long while he surfaced with nothing to show for his efforts. One by one, the other animals offered to help. Otter, beaver, sturgeon, but the depth, the darkness, and the pressures were too great for even the strongest swimmers. They returned gasping for air with their heads ringing. Some did not return at all. Soon, only little Muskrat was left, the weakest diver of all. He volunteered to go while the others looked on doubtfully. His small legs flailed as he worked his way downward, and he was gone a very long time. They waited and waited for him to return, fearing the worst for their relative, and before long a stream of bubbles rose with the small, limp body of the muskrat. He had given his life to aid this helpless human. But then the others noticed that his paw was tightly clenched, and when they opened it, there was a small handful of mud. Turtle said, "Here, put it on my back and I will hold it." Sky Woman bent and spread the mud with her hands across the shell of the turtle. Moved by this extraordinary gift of the animals, she sang in thanksgiving and then began to dance, her feet caressing the earth. The land grew and grew as she danced her thanks from the dab of mud on Turtle's back until the whole earth was made. Not by Sky Woman alone, but from the alchemy of all the animals' gifts, coupled with her deep gratitude. Together they formed what we know today as Turtle Island, our home. Isn't it wonderful to imagine that we live on the back of an immense turtle? How many were here last week for Michael's talk about dragons? The Dharma of Dragons. If you weren't, you can listen to it still online. But it inspired me to think about sharing some turtle dharma, continuing the reptilian theme. Turtles don't, like dragons, have a place on the Chinese zodiac, or the Western zodiac for that matter, but they are beloved in many cultures as symbols of wisdom, patience, long life, and healing medicine. Giant land tortoises and sea turtles often live well into their second century, way longer than we do. And some are reputed, there are stories of them, unauthenticated stories of them living beyond 300. Turtles are on a different time scale than we are. And maybe that's part of their appeal. Plus, they're so ugly cute. And maybe we can relate. Maybe we can all relate at some point to that urge to pull all our vulnerable parts under a protective shell. But turtles are not safe in this world. Their shells are not enough. Many species are severely endangered by our human habits of using fast-moving vehicles, filling and paving over their wetland habitats, and overhunting them for their eggs, meat, and shells. I'll come back to this later. And you'll see more why I was moved to talk about turtles today. This talk is too long because there's so many interesting things about turtles. So if you want to find out what's the difference between a turtle and a tortoise, you can talk to me later. Turtles are associated with the earth and also with water. Okay, I have to tell you. turtles is fine to use generically, but turtles live all or most of their life in water, and tortoises don't. So turtles often have webbed feet or flippers in the case of sea turtles, and tortoises have short, stumpy legs and live in drier places. Desert tortoises burrow into the earth for protection from the heat, and pond turtles dig down into the mud beneath the pond for protection from the cold. They can live in a completely frozen pond if they're deep in the mud. And sea turtles, of course, spend nearly all their lives in salt water, except when they come up on the beaches to lay their eggs. You may remember from Michael's talk last week that dragons are associated with the sea and with water, and that the bodhisattva of compassion, Kannon or Kuan Yin, is often pictured with a dragon, and sometimes less often pictured with a sea turtle. Maybe hold her up so that the folks over there can see. We really love this image. We have her on one of our altars at home. She is holding you can't really see, but she's holding a vial with amrita, the nectar of immortality, the healing medicine. This image of a turtle holding up the earth is not only found in indigenous Turtle Island cultures, but in ancient Indian culture. The earth is pictured being held up by seven elephants standing on the back, or four elephants, different varies, standing on the back of a giant turtle, and then holding up the earth. You may have heard the expression, turtles all the way down. A few nods. Wikipedia tells me that this phrase has been used to title a rock song, a country song, and a novel, none of which I am familiar with. But the origin of this phrase, this expression turtles all the way down, is uncertain. There are different versions, different stories that seem to feature the proverbial wise little old woman who interrogates some professional figure, some pompous professional figure about the origin of the world. And the old woman maintains that it's resting on the back of a giant turtle. And the professor counters with the question, well, what's holding up the turtle? And she says, turtles all the way down. This image of turtles all the way down has been used to illustrate the concept of infinite regress, which is, if I can put it most simply, a phenomenon depends on a previous phenomenon, which depends on a previous phenomenon, and ad infinitum. Infinite regress leads to what's called explanatory failure, or the ultimate failure to account for the phenomenon. When the Buddha was asked metaphysical questions such as, how did the universe begin? He dodged. He avoided infinite regress, explanatory failure, by saying, I teach the causes of suffering and the path to the ending of suffering, right here and now. But I was thinking about turtles all the way down. And if we think of them as generations of ancestors supporting and guiding us, we don't have to worry about ultimate origins. We can be grateful that they're down there supporting us. And we can just touch the earth when we get doubtful and frightened and confused, as the Buddha did on sitting under the Bodhi tree when Mara, the tempter's armies, assailed him with basically asking, who do you think you are to sit there thinking you're going to be enlightened? And Mara said, who do you have to bear witness for you? I have all these warriors, these armies. And the Buddha touched the earth and said, the earth is my witness. And many of us do that in one way or another. We touch the earth when we're needing that kind of support. In most of the folklore traditions of the world, the turtle is a wise and kind figure. But it's very curious, I discovered, that there's another motif that occurs in more than one tradition. It's very interesting, just like in evolution, evolutionary forms arise in completely different parts of the world where they could not have had direct origin or contact because of conditions arising and shaping them. So same thing with these stories, I think, because one is from the Dakota Sioux First Nation in North America, and the other's in India, the other side of the world. And the Dakota Sioux version, the turtle notices that the birds are getting restless, the weather's getting cooler, and the birds are getting ready to do something. And the turtle asks, what's going on? And the birds say, we're going to fly south, where the food is more plentiful for the cold winter months. And the turtle thinks that sounds pretty good and asks, can I go too? And the birds say, well, you have to be able to fly to do this. But the turtle doesn't give up and says, isn't there some way that you can take me? So the birds decide, grab a stick, and two strong birds hold the stick on each side in their claws and tell the turtle to grab on with his jaws and keep your mouth shut. Now, some of us know it's not always easy to keep our mouth shut, even when we know we should. So the birds fly high over the forest and the lakes, and the turtle is so amazed at the view, he really wants to comment. But he keeps his mouth shut. He stays steady. But then he's getting really, really tired. And he really needs to ask, how much further? When are we going to get there? And he opens his mouth and drops down to the earth, landing so hard that his shell cracks. He crawls into a pond, digs down into the mud to recover from his wounds and his humiliation, and there spends the winter. So this, of course, explains why turtles spend the winter in the mud and why their shells are cracked. In the Indian version of the story, it's swans who carry the turtle to see their home, a golden cave on a mountain peak famed for its beauty. And in this scenario, the turtle is first taunted by some boys down below trying to throw stones at him, and it's very annoying. But still, turtle manages not to respond. But then later they pass over a king's palace, and the king's cook spies them and shouts up, "What a fat turtle! You'd make a great soup for the king's dinner." And the turtle is so angry, it opens its mouth to scream insults at the cook. Falls to its death, ending up in the soup pot after all. So these stories offer a rather different, somewhat self-absorbed turtle who has trouble exercising restraint even at its own peril. So these are obviously teaching stories aimed at us human beings. And of course we project various qualities, both admirable and not so admirable, upon the animal world. And the classic turtle story from the European tradition is of course the fable of the tortoise and the hare, written by the Greek storyteller Aesop in the 6th century before the Common Era, long, long ago. How many people know the tortoise and the hare story these days? Is it still alive? Yes, largely. The hare makes fun of the tortoise for being so slow until the tortoise gets fed up and challenges the hare to a race. Along the way, the hare is so overconfident he lies down under a tree and falls asleep. By the time he wakes up and races after to catch up, the tortoise has crossed the finish line. Slow and steady wins the race, right? That's the moral of the story. And of course, that's not always true about foot races, but there is certainly wisdom to that moral of the tale when it comes to certain other kinds of tasks. Slow and steady. In Japan, the classic turtle tale is Urashima Taro. And maybe a few of you have heard that one. There are many versions, as with all these tales, because, of course, they were passed along orally long before they were ever written down. But this one is written down back in the 8th century in Japan. Urashima Taro was a young fisherman who caught a beautiful five-colored turtle. When he hoisted it into his boat, it turned out to be a lovely young woman, a princess, of course, who invited him to her father's palace. It turned out she was the Dragon King's daughter, and the gorgeous palace was in the undersea realm where Urashima Taro was taken, where he lived, where he married the princess and lived happily for 3 years, enjoying all the luxuries on offer at the Dragon King's palace. But after a while, he became homesick for his village and his family, and he begged to be allowed to visit, even just for a short time. So finally, the princess relented and gave him a little jeweled box, saying, "When you're ready to come back to me, hold this box tightly and make a strong wish, but you must never, of course, open the box." So he made his way back in his small boat to his village. It was familiar, but somehow entirely changed. He wandered the streets, but there was no one he recognized. He finally asked a man if he knew the Urashima family. The man replied that there was no family of that name anymore, but there was an old story about a young man named Urashima Taro that went out to sea and never returned. But that was 300 years ago. Taro was shocked and bereft. How could so much time have elapsed when he was living at the Dragon King's realm for only 3 years? He suddenly longed to be back with his wife, took out the box she had given him, and completely forgetting her warning, opened it. Her form appeared like a wisp of smoke and vanished into the sky. And after that, all he could do was send out his love for her in song carried on the wind and listen for her reply as the waves washed the shore. And it didn't say in the version versions I saw, but maybe he turned into an old man like Rip Van Winkle. The Western story. These kind of tales, like Urashima Taro or Rip Van Winkle or in others, other folk tales, express that sort of relativity of time, don't they? The elasticity of time. Human time, dragon time, turtle time, pandemic time, dream time. This is the territory of myth and folklore, but also of our direct experience of time. Right? Did anybody feel time was a little strange over those pandemic months, kind of in suspension? And did things pre-pandemic start to get a little hazy? When was that? Yeah? Dogen Zenji, who founded our tradition of Zen in Japan, said, "Time itself is being, and all being is time. See each thing in this entire world as a moment of time. Each moment of being, each moment is the entire world." Turtles appear in various teaching stories from the Buddhist tradition. The most common are tales of turtles expressing gratitude for being rescued by humans, typically from being caught by a fisherman or sold at a market. The person buys the turtle and releases it in the sea or in a pond, and then the turtle later appears and in some act of gratitude. In one case, coming and spreading healing mud to ease a fever. In another case, to rescue a child dropped overboard by a, you know, spiteful stepmother. Another worldwide unfair trope. And there's often an image of the turtle when it's being released, turning back, looking back in gratitude at the person who releases it. In one case, the man who released a turtle many years earlier comes into good fortune and goes to have a seal made, you know, the kind of stamps for legal documents, personal stamps. And each time the seal comes out of the mold, there's an image of a turtle looking back. So he sends it back for the seal maker to try again and try again each time. It looks like a turtle looking back, and then he remembers the turtle from years before and how it looked back as it swam into the ocean. In a number of East Asian and Southeast Asian culture, Buddhist cultures, there's a long-standing practice of gaining merit through, and it's still to this day, gaining merit through releasing birds or fish or turtles back into the wild that have been destined to be cooked or eaten. But unfortunately, this custom has been contaminated by human greed, as so many good intentions are, by entrepreneurs who raise the animals in cages specifically to be sold to those wanting to release them. So ultimately endangering the very beings that are ostensibly being saved. This complicates matters, and we can see it in various ways in our own efforts, sometimes, to save other beings. But also these tales mostly express the spontaneous urge which we have as human beings to protect and free a defenseless creature. We have a natural urge to nurture and protect the young and helpless. This whole realm of myth and story was evoked to me as I read this book recently called Of Time and Turtles, Mending the World Shell by Shattered Shell. Michael gave me this for Christmas. I was going to get it for him, but he scooped me, which is an accomplishment, as some of you may imagine. So I got to read it first. It's by a writer named Cy Montgomery. And it's about turtles, many of them endangered, and the people who work tremendously hard to save them, to protect their nesting sites, to heal and rehabilitate them when they're injured. They also save turtle eggs from nests that are at risk of disturbance and hatch them in incubators, raise the baby turtles until they're large enough to be more safely released. It's pretty amazing. There are some pretty amazing stories in here. Montgomery focuses her account on her firsthand experience as an intern with the Turtle Rescue League facility in Massachusetts. Turtles have been on Earth since the age of dinosaurs. But she writes, turtles are the most imperiled major group of animals on Earth. Like other wild animals, turtle populations shrink when houses, roads, and stores displace their homes. They suffer from pollution, climate change, and invasive species. Cars run them over. Dogs, raccoons, skunks, and otters chew them up. And on top of all this, there is a murderous, monstrous, illegal trade in turtles for their meat, their eggs, for their shells, and for pets. Helping an animal is a good thing, Alexia, who was the director of the Turtle Rescue Center, told the group that had gathered there. She said, saving a chipmunk is a good thing, but if you save a turtle, particularly a female turtle, she may be able to lay eggs for another 100 years. With each turtle you save, you are saving generations. Reading this book, I learned that turtles are more intelligent than you might imagine, that they recognize individual people and communicate with them and with each other, and that they have remarkable healing powers, which is probably why they came to be known or sought out as healing for humans as medicine. With good care, they can recover from the most horrific injuries. It's not even well understood why. The goal of their human rescuers is always, if at all possible, to release them back into the wild, sometimes after months of rehabilitation. So throughout this book, Montgomery reflects on time. She and her friend and neighbor, the artist Matt Patterson, who did the beautiful illustrations in this book, arranged to do it this internship, and just when they were about to start, the pandemic broke out. So they went ahead observing rigorous precautions, but they also experienced, as I just mentioned, that sense of time disorientation. But working with the turtles through the changing seasons provided a sense of stability and grounding, slowing down to turtle time, connecting to the ancient rhythms that extend back before human beings walked on Earth. With each hatch of baby turtles, a connection to generations past and future, both impermanence and continuity. The work of animal rescue and rehabilitation is demanding and deeply rewarding and often heartbreaking, just like working in emergency medicine. for people. Volunteers and staff alike can't help becoming invested in succeeding with rescues and becoming attached to their favorites. At the Turtle Rescue League, when turtles die, they are saved in a deep freeze until spring, when a hole is dug for their grave and staff and volunteers gather for a memorial where they tell stories in remembrance. And again, this is Alexia, the director. Oh no, this is the other. There are two women, Natasha. And this is the eulogy. From an adult 100 years old to tiny babies, they all lived, even a little bit. They all tasted life. They all felt the warmth from Mother Earth. Some defied the odds to become monster turtles. From Mother Earth they crawled, and to Mother Earth they return. Let's complete their final nest in the ground by securing them. Everyone, please place a rock over them. So that's what they did every year. Wildlife rehabilitators experience not only the sadness of being unable to save the creatures in their care, but also the joy of being able to release them back into the wild, even knowing the risks and hazards that await them. Montgomery tells the stories of these happy releases and how the volunteers watch carefully as the baby turtles they've raised or the older turtles that they've nursed back to health make their way into the ponds and marshes that will be their new homes. Some plunge right in, just ch-ch-ch. Some are hesitant and shy at first, and some head for the water and then look back at those who have cared for them, just like those turtles in the old tales. There may be some who would say, when there are so many suffering human beings in this world, how can you put time and resources into saving animals, saving turtles? Isn't survival of the fittest the law of evolution? But something happens when we engage with other species, being with other kinds of sentience that are similar but different from ours. In helping them, observing them closely, communicating with them, we learn. We open our minds, our senses, our hearts. Maybe we learn to care for each other a little bit better as well. Our first gods were the sun and moon, water and fire. And then came the animals. They were our gods, the lion, the elephant, eagle, raven, turtle. They taught us and we were grateful for their gifts until we decided to create gods in our own image. Gods which gave us dominion over the animals. When we pay attention and tend to animals, we're brought back to a kind of lost humility. Our bodhisattva vow to save all beings does not apply just to human beings. If we truly care for all beings, the grasses and trees, the 2, 4, 6, 8 many-footed beings, the flying and swimming beings upon whose lives our own depend. As I said, we'll simultaneously learn how to care for each other and for those who are different from us, who are harder to care for. Animals teach us that. We will learn about time and seasons and cycles of life and how to do the hard, loving work of tikkun. It's the Hebrew word for mending the world. Shell by shattered shell, as this book says, heart by broken heart. So, whatever small ways, let's join together to do that. Thank you all for listening. Let's chant.
Page 3. After Dharma talk.